The sun shall never set on so glorious a human achievement. Let freedom reign. God bless Africa.
I am an African. I owe my being to the hills and the valleys, the mountains and the glades, the rivers, the deserts, the trees, the flowers, the seas, and the ever-changing seasons that define the face of our native land.
There is a place for all South Africans, black and white. It is a partnership.
This is now the time where we should honor the memory of Nelson Mandela to build a new, better South Africa for all our people. Now is the time.
Welcome to yet another episode of the 30 Years of Democracy podcast with myself, Thabo Tshabalala. On this episode, I am speaking to one of the few females who are competing in the upcoming elections, Dr. Senathi Fisher. Dr. Senathi Fisher, how are you and how are you doing this morning?
I'm okay, Thabo, and how are you?
I'm fine, just a bit cold, doctor. We're getting into that season again.
Winter's
literally starting to creep in. Yes. Welcome to the show. And just to start things off, just tell us a bit about who Dr. Senathi Fisher is, where she was born, just so that I can get an understanding of which era you were born in.
Well, Dr. Senathi Fisher is born, it's a woman from Hamadlala Thaba in Limpopo. Right in the mountains where we find the mountains of the ancestors, Thaba ya Mogoshi, which no one should climb except through the royal house. And I'm from the royal house myself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was born there, and my mother, I was raised by a grandmother, Kukuma Tibidi, and my mother was working as always. I know my mother is a working woman. She was a domestic worker, and she worked there for 32 years.
Oh, wow.
She you know, throughout my school years, she was working. And I'm literally raised by a grandmother.
Wow.
And she was very much, my grandmother was very much highly educated without going to school, because she used to teach me how to respect people. She used to say, whenever someone comes in the house, you must come and greet those people, and you must see what you can do for them. She is the most instrumental woman in my life. And when you look at me, you see my mother and my grandmother first, and my mother. So I grew up under them, and what they used to emphasize in my life was education.
Yes.
My grandmother used to say, you must not cook, you must not wash dishes, but at least do me a favor, you must read your books. So
wow.
I used to go to the, even when I was going to get water, I would take my little book with me.
While you're pouring the
just
water.
To please her, because she was very instrumental.
Wow.
Even when I started with my degree, academic work, she and my mother at that time, they're the people that actually took me and said, we want you to wear a black gown.
And you are one of the, I think the first black South African to actually manage a psychiatric hospital, if I can say that, Doc.
Yes.
Yes.
And let me just start from the back and say, my own mother used to come with tea bags and dried bread. And when she get home, she'll buy she'll ask men to milk cows. And they used to make tea in a big, this black three-legged pot.
Yes,
and she would call the community and say, come and taste tea. They will come there and we'll all dine from that tea with milk and sugar that she came with. And that was the first time I knew that we are going somewhere, because my own mother was the first to bring tea in the community.
So she was sort of like a community builder.
She was, and she didn't know.
Wow.
She actually didn't know. She just brought these things, and we became very instrumental as a family. Mm. We were not well off, but we became a notable family.
In the community.
And that built me to start initiating things without fear.
Mm.
And they taught me to be fearless also. So when I went in, I did my matric, starting with grade 9.
Yes.
I became number 1. And then I passed my matric, but they used to say I should become a doctor.
Yeah.
And I said yes. And I took wrong subjects.
Yeah.
You know,
in grade 10.
Yeah, I took wrong subjects.
Which
that could not
take,
even
doctor?
Get me into university. I took biblical studies and geography.
Okay.
And then when I finally got my matric, applied with confidence, I went there and I was told that we regret to tell you that you don't qualify. But they were insisting because they don't know about subjects, and my parents insisted on that one.
On those,
and
those
they said,
subjects.
We want you to be a doctor.
Oh, wow.
Rather bring a black gown at home. Mm. So I'm emphasizing on this because I want parents not to give up on their children.
Mm.
You must always encourage them, even when it is dark, you must show them the light. So being a first psychiatric person in the country,
a
woman, black woman, who brought a voluntary psychiatric hospital was stemming from the origin where I know that I have to try something. Even if it doesn't look good, I must push myself up until I get it right. And I did that. I used to tell people that one day I'm going to own a clinic. And then when the time came, because I used to be extremely busy as a psychologist, I said to them, I want a hospital. I've got so many problems around me, and people come here, they've got nowhere to get help. And I decided that I should apply for a hospital.
So,
and then lucky, I was given a license.
And you were one of the first blacks to...
To get a voluntary, there's a difference between just a mental illness psychiatric hospital and a voluntary psychiatric hospital.
Okay.
Voluntary is like me and you.
When we
feel like we are tired, exhausted, depression, anxiety, and then we can book ourselves, someone can refer us. But a mental hospital, we're talking about hospital like Vescopis, you know, Stadfontein, Tara, those hospitals where you are really insane. So now we wanted to capture the people before they get worse.
And Dr. Fisher, your time growing up in Limpopo, can you explain when did you realize, Uguti, I'm living in a country that is divided? When did you realize that? Did your grandmother tell you, Uguti, Wanak, we have this in our country? When did you realize, Uguti, I'm living under apartheid?
I think this came up with experience. My parents were not politicians and not politically astute also.
Yes.
And then I too, I was really very naive in terms of politics. But as I was growing up from matric, I remember one day because we were carrying dipas.
Yes, dipas.
Yeah,
yes. The dom pas and
dipas. So I was doing a trick in Port Clitus Rust in Makwilering. And the police, the white police came. We were in town and they came and they arrested us. We were a bunch of students. We took a chance that day. We went to town.
Yes.
And then we were arrested by these people. They put us at a corner.
Oh,
and they said, we are taking you. You don't have a dumbass.
Were you guys resistant in any way? Did you guys
No, we were just getting into the shops because it was like we went to heaven. It was very nice to be in that town.
Yeah.
And then fortunately for us, our teacher came, Teacher Ntswane. He came and he said to them, these are my children. I was, at that time, I was doing matric in Kojela High School. And then that was when I realized that we are not free in this country. There are certain places where you cannot go.
Yeah.
So this country is for other people and not for the others.
And how did that
I'm
make you
one
feel,
of those don't? People that is discriminated.
Mm.
Yes.
And how did that make you feel?
No, it's still traumatizing me even today because it's a story I never forget.
Mm.
You know, like when I think of my growing up years, I'm thinking about when I was taken to that corner.
Mm.
If there's one thing that I can say now that I'm a psychologist, I will tell you that that I was traumatized by that experience. And you know, post-traumatic stress disorder, you don't forget.
Yeah.
And it repeatedly comes to your mind. And now I can literally say, I was traumatized, and that was when I became conscious of who am I in South Africa. At that time, I didn't even know whether it was for school children or for what, but I realized that it was for a black person.
Yeah.
I didn't know that the dorm buses were only for black people then. And it's still there in my mind.
Oh, yeah.
So it started long time ago.
And
maybe more than 40 years ago, or 50 years.
50 years. And going through varsity, university, how did they treat you that you're a black person who's studying towards being a psychiatrist, a professional doctor? Were there any hindrances that hindered you from completing your degree? Because, I mean, you're living under apartheid and you're saying that you want to be a doctor. Wasn't there anybody stopping you from actually achieving that goal and that dream?
Look, Tab, what stops a black African person from entering the university and becoming who they are stems from the curriculum that we have. The first thing that happened to me was that I took biblical studies.
Yes.
There was no career guidance. And that was the curriculum that was taught at school. We were told that this is, and even today I know the Bible in and out,
yes,
because I studied the Bible from the beginning, but that Bible was not taking me anywhere. It fortunately for me, it assisted to build me to have this integrity, but it was not making me to push a career. So now when I finally finished and I have geography in my hands, and I want to be a doctor, I remember people laughing at me.
Yes.
They said, but we don't take this. The reception was there said, you don't take this. So the prohibition and the limitation of becoming what you want as a black child starts from the curriculum. Our curriculum at that time was completely misdirected. And it did not produce anything thereafter.
Yeah.
And in our community, when we grew up, we were taught that to be a teacher and a policeman and a nurse were the most, you know, glorified, you know, professions. And I took the nursing profession. When I realized I could not become a doctor, I became a nurse.
And that's still community building.
Yes,
if you think
but there was so limitation. I could not think of becoming a scientist.
Is that because of the apartheid system that
it was the apartheid system, because the system had developed the education that will make sure that a black person is suppressed forever.
They call it the Bantu education.
Yes, Bantu education. Yeah. You start from there, you're doomed for life.
And you being a nurse now, how did you now realize there's more to this than just being a nurse? I can actually become a psychiatrist. I can actually become a doctor. Where did you realize that I need more, not I just don't want to be a nurse?
You know, I became a nurse, ne? And as I say, my own parents played the biggest contribution in being who I am. They said to me, but you're just an ordinary nurse. Oh, those people were pushed.
Oh my goodness.
And my mother even went to the extent of saying, my next door neighbor told me that you are not going to become a doctor. And then I started realizing that I'm actually earning nothing. At that time, you know how much I was earning?
Uh-huh.
I was a final year nurse and I was earning 24 rand.
Oh.
I had three
but
kids.
But back then, I think money was different.
No, I had three kids. Oh, what would I do with three kids with 24 rand?
24 rand?
Yes. And I had to support my parents. That was when I realized that no man, but I'm going nowhere. And I decided just to go to the university to improve my education. First, I applied and I said, I want to be a doctor again because I've got a nursing
now
background.
You have a nursing background, yeah.
But they refused me again.
What? Is it because you were
because
black?
Because I did not have science subjects.
It's not. It had nothing to do with your race, I guess.
No, at that time it was a black university.
It was a black university. Yes, Mendoza. I was about to say you went to Mendoza as well.
Yes, but remember, the science subjects were for the elite.
Yes.
It was still apartheid, suppression of a black child, because as a child who was raised by old people coming from the mountains, no one has ever exposed me to anything. So now, even when I went to the university, I was taking a chance. There was a doctor who helped me to apply. Number one option, I said, I want to be a medical doctor. Number two, then I had no choice. I said, I want to be a nurse. And then the application came back. We regret again to tell you that you cannot be a doctor.
Sure.
And it was a trauma and a blow on my face.
Sure.
And I took nursing. I got in. 2 months down the line, I was told that you don't have a bursary.
Sure.
And I didn't know that that was a building block to where I am today, to teach me to work hard and still get what I want, irrespective of all the blockages. I must work so hard I can still break them. I mean, today, look, after all odds, against all odds, I am a doctor.
And I just want to understand, doctor, when did it finally succeed? When did you finally succeed? When did it finally break? When you're like, you are finally accepted to studying being a psychiatrist?
You know what I did? I went...
Are you revealing secrets?
I'm revealing a secret. You know, for 4 years, four solid years, I never rested. I decided to make a choice. I remember sitting in my room and I said, I want to be a doctor. And how I'm going to get it, I will use the longest route of getting to India. And then I said to myself, I'm going to attend classes twice a day. I used to get into the class for nursing when I was studying for a nursing degree. I would go to class. At lunchtime, when people are going to eat, I chose to attend a class of psychology.
So you never took your lunch.
Now
you,
look at what how I lived for 4 years. I set social life on the side. Only my children and the education. And I used to go there from 9 o'clock to 1 o'clock. 1 o'clock to 2, I would attend psychology classes. Psychology one, only one subject. And then 4 o'clock after class. You know what I used to do? I would rush to a room where I was staying. Change the clothes, wear the nursing clothes. I was a nurse by then.
And then you go and,
go to a taxi in Marabastad and take a taxi and go to Santon Clinic to be a nurse, to work as a nurse.
Studying.
And then I did night shift. At night, I'm a nurse and I was lucky I became a senior nurse. At night, I was a nurse overseeing all the patients. And then during the day, I'm a student.
Student, yeah.
And student of two things.
Of two things.
Nursing degree, psychology, one. And I did this for 4 years. I got psychology 3. And then at the end of 3 years, I got the best student in the entire university.
Wow.
I got the Chancellor's
Award. Chancellor's Award, yes.
And ask myself, when did I sleep?
I was about to ask you, when did you
weekend get... when I come back every Saturday, that lunchtime, the 1 to 3 now.
Yes.
I used to go to where my children were boarding and I would sit under the tree, supervise their schoolwork, and then pass and go to where I stay.
Where you stay.
When I get there to the doctor's quarters, I would just get there, wash and bath, and get a taxi again.
Wow.
So for 4 years, I slept for 30
perseverance
minutes.
On another
even
level.
Today, people are wondering, why are you not sleeping? They don't know that I was trained in the military, self-militarized.
Yes.
Yeah, that's how I actually became a doctor. Then, when I finished the first 3 years, I had a nursing degree where I became number one. And then, at the same time, I had psychology 3.
Yes.
And then, I then took 1 year. Still working, I did honors in psychology.
Still honors?
Yeah.
Still
I'm a psychiatric nurse at
nurse
that time.
Now, yes.
Then I did honors in psychology.
Wow.
I took it with flying colors. And then after that, I went to school again full time. I never broke, I had a break. Continued with master's in clinical
degree.
Psychology. And I got my master's.
Yeah.
Then the first day I got to work, as a psychologist in private practice in Louis Pasteur Hospital, yeah. I then registered to be a doctor.
And when was that, doctor? Was that after 1994 or was it just before?
I passed my psychology in 1994, December, wow. I got my certificate. On that day, I sat under a tree and a patient, someone was passing. I called them and I said, do you have problems at home? And then that person said, yeah, no, hey, my boyfriend. I said, do you have medical aid?
Oh, wow, that was your first client.
I wanted to have the first client and the first name.
Wow. And how did that feel? Because it's 1994. We just had our first elections as a country. This thing called apartheid is over. You now have your degree, your master's degree. You're qualified psychologist. You know, how did that make you feel?
I was feeling ecstatic. You know, like what I did. I then went to Louis Pasteur, where the Louis Pasteur used to be a place, a medical center for only white people. Uh-huh. And I went there. My professor, Dr. Mkuan, was the only black doctor there. I went there and I said, I'm looking for the rooms here.
I looked at the
board. It was just all white.
Oh.
Lily white. Mm. And then I said to myself, I'm coming in here. Because the new dawn has arrived.
The new dawn is here. So you were like the second black.
It was my second phase of life.
Yeah.
And I was the second black. In the more than 300 people who were there.
And in that sector, during, you know, with the new dawn of democracy, was there sort of a shift? How did the white people at the time feel seeing now black individuals coming into public institutions? Like, was there a reaction from the white people, or was everything just, you know, hunky dory? Everything was fine.
There was a big negative reaction. After I got in there, because I've always been a people of a lot, mass people following me.
Mm.
Then Louis Pasteur, as a medical center, started being flooded by black people. People used to come to my practice and they would queue in the passages. Black people now.
Mm.
I was one of the first people that changed psychology from being white to black. And people thought it was fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody was proud to say, I've got a psychologist. Yes. And they used to come there and they would queue in the passages.
Mm.
And when they're queuing there, it was irritating black people. Doctors.
Mm.
And within 3 months, Louis Pasteur became black. The boards were empty.
Everything.
The white doctors
so did they vacate?
Had moved out.
Wow.
Even if you can go to Louis Pasteur today, maybe you'll find one white doctor, or five, or less than 10.
Oh, wow.
The rest is black.
Yeah.
And that is how I made psychology, mental health care, to be in fashion. And for people never to see it as a stigma, because it used to be a highly stigmatized profession.
Mm.
And black people now started feeling proud to go and see a psychologist.
Do you think, you know, before we go into the politics, doctor, do you think mental health is taken seriously now in 2024? As you say, do you think that stigma still lingers, still exists, or has it become better, as you're saying? But I just want to, like, where we are now with mental health, it's become such a bigger problem now.
Yes.
My generation and the generation that comes after me, we really have a mental health problem. Do you think it's still there? Do you think it's gotten better?
Well, mental health, it's a serious problem. It has always been serious. Mm-hmm. Even if you can go into the Bible, you'll find that it started there with
King Saul, they were
losing their mind. And they were, you know, given treatment through music. It has gone through all the stages of life, generations of life.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point in time, in South Africa, mental health has gone from bad to worse. One of our manifesto.
Yes, that was one of your pillars.
Is to build nation building.
You say you call it free mental health.
We are going to bring in national rehabilitation of the nation, because the whole nation needs to be rehabilitated from one form of any form of addiction, and so hence I'm saying, from the youth to the middle age. even the old people, you know, all this crime that we're seeing, we just not have any remorse. And the worst crimes that we're seeing, the anger that we're seeing, people are taking out their frustration through anger. The unemployment and poverty, if you think during COVID, that is when we saw a lot of domestic violence. People, because they were now home, it was finally exposed that we are actually a violent nation. We are a violent nation. So mental health has gone from bad to worse, but there are no facilities in South Africa. The treatment for mental health is for the haves and the have-nots. You know, it is divided, seriously discriminative. Because you can't afford it. For you to be able to see a psychiatrist, or let's say a psychologist, do you know how much you have to pay?
No, I've seen one before, so I know it's a lot of money.
Yeah. I at my level now, I'll charge you not less than 3,000 or 4,000 or 5,000. I can even charge 10,000 depending on the time I spend with you. But I am not 100% a holy person. It's not like you go to a GP, gives you headache treatment.
There's
for
no
headache.
Treatment for mental health. Yeah.
After seeing the psychologist, I'm going to assess you and I'm going to say you need psychiatric treatment. Now I refer you to a psychiatrist,
doctor,
who is going to now prescribe for you
certain medication.
To see him, you are going to pay 2,000. When you finish paying that 2,000, he's going to refer you to a pharmacist where you're going to buy medication. Our medication are so expensive. If you have to get the right medication, you will part with about 2,500 to 3,000. So I'm already at the 10,000 level of just having one consultation. And then I realize that you've got, you know, family problems. I refer you to a social worker. So it's a matter of unaffordable treatment, but the government has not taken this very seriously.
Do you think institutions like SADC, the South African Anti-Depression, do you think it doesn't help? Do you think,
no, it doesn't help. SADC is meant as a marketing ploy. SADC is done by, you know, a pharmaceutical drug companies to market psychiatric medication. So they open these call centers. They want people who are desperate to phone them, but their hospitals and clinics only takes people with medical aid scheme.
Wow.
So
I didn't realize that.
Yes. Yeah? It is not meant for assisting people to have awareness or anything. This is a treatment that is meant for black people to support pharmaceutical companies,
medical aids.
And then when you hear that, they say, if you want to commit suicide, phone here. The minute you phone, they tell you that here's the clinic where you should go. First question they will ask you, are you on medical scheme? If you say yes, you are the client.
You are the
target. Then you go there. The first thing you do, you see a psychiatrist and they prescribe the medication. So SADC is not anywhere next to rehabilitating the nation.
The nation. So it doesn't help. And now, doctor, I wanted to understand, seeing that you are such a healthcare activist, I know that doesn't make sense. It does make sense. Yeah. But why politics, doctor? Why open up a political party, the ACP?
You know, I was motivated even up to now by what I'm seeing if we have to talk about health. You know, the health industry in South Africa. You feel the pressure.
You see it.
Forever.
And you see it when you get into a health health institution.
Health facility that the government has declared as public. I cannot go there myself. And if I cannot go there, it means my family cannot there. It means my community cannot there go there. And then let me tell you about healthcare facilities in South Africa that can motivate you to become a politician. Firstly, the healthcare facility of South Africa is monopolized. We have got the big four. And when you look at the big four, you are Netcare, Mediclinic,
Life,
Discovery. When you look at those big four, there's no black person there. So it's totally white
dominated
and monopolized. White dominated and monopolized. Mm. So now we are forever as black doctors being controlled by the white
people.
Monopolies. And people don't see it. If you go to a government with more than 700 institutions, who is the person in charge there? It's a white-dominated company.
Mm.
And you'll never enter into a government to become, to provide service to the black workers for government.
Mm.
It's all dominated by one company. If it's not that company,
it's going to be
the second one, which is white also. The insurances of South Africa.
It's all white dominated. So
if there's any suppressed profession in South Africa where there has never been any transformation, is in the healthcare industry.
Mm.
So when you are a doctor, there's no way you cannot feel the pressure because even the medical scheme has actually discriminated blacks. When they see a busy black, they say this one is corrupt. If that's you can claim case. About 4 million from the medical scheme, they stop your payment without even telling you. And the next thing they say, produce how you have seen these patients.
Mm.
And I am one of the people that actually fought for discrimination of doctors by the medical scheme. I was at the forefront. I'm the one who signed the memorandum of agreement with Discovery when we realized that one medical aid will blacklist you. After blacklisting you, let's say, for example, Discovery blacklists you. Discovery manages 10 more medical schemes. So it means you cannot even go to those 10 those medical, other schemes. Medical schemes. So where are you going to work as a private doctor?
Sure.
So if there's any transformation needed in this country, it's needed in the healthcare industry. Okay.
And that's why you chose to start and a that's why
I chose there. Firstly, I'm frustrated when I see a patient. The options that they give our people, because they don't earn much, they give them options that are never going to take them anywhere. The option will say is a hospitalization option. When you are sick, you can't go and see the doctor. And when they see that the psychologist and the physiotherapist are too busy, they stop them altogether from seeing the patients. So that is where we are, Thabo, in regards to healthcare facility. I want to scrap the monopoly of healthcare facility services. I want to improve the community and public services. I want to allocate best doctors to the clinics. This remote care of people must be run by the doctors, not people that the government thinks that they're below the standard. We want to get rid of bogus doctors and make sure that the healthcare industry of this country is affordable and is best for the people.
And now going into the SACP, what is the SACP? I understand you are the leader. ACP.
It's
sorry.
All yeah. Citizens all Party.
Party.
It's a party for everyone in South Africa.
Yeah.
All Citizens Party.
And you are contesting the elections.
I am contesting the elections because I've got a lot of things to deal with. One of the things that I want to deal with is when I realize that as you see me where I'm sitting, I am not even credit worthy. Do you know that I can't buy a car myself?
Oh.
Yes.
Okay.
Blacks are blacklisted like no other person.
You
know, when you see a black person owning a car, like one person was saying, it's because that person has used someone else's credit. I've tried 15 of the people who are closest to me. And they agreed. And I took in their credit for assessment. None of them qualified. And this
is this the monopolies?
This blacklisting of black people. systems. Let me say the blacklisting systems. I want to scrap that one. That's the first thing I'm gonna introduce the debt amnesty. black people must not own to the extent that they cannot qualify to buy themselves something that will sustain their lives.
Just because they are blacklisted.
Just because they are blacklisted. You go there, you owe 5 rand, they take your house. You go there, you are unemployed for a year. You can't pay a car, you can't pay the 5 rand, you can't pay the school fees. They actually, you are just living in a nightmare. And this affects only blacks. These ITC systems, the credit bureaus, must be scrapped when we come in government. I want to resuscitate the credit system of a black child so that we can improve our lives. If you look at how what All Citizens Party is going to do, we are going to start with one person, restructure, rebuild South Africa. Rebuild nation building of the people. Take them for rehabilitation, national rehabilitation. People are going to have registered and they will write, I'm addicted to a cell phone. I'm addicted to, I'm addicted to energy drinks. I'm addicted to dacha. I'm addicted to drugs. And then there will be a national rehabilitation center for that.
And
that is where I specialize.
And doctor, how are you going to do that given the... given where our health system is at the moment, because when you, if, for example, you assume office, right, you're going to inherit things that the previous administration had failed to do. You're going to inherit a health system that has literally collapsed at some, in some parts of the country. How are you going to deal with all the historical things that you, that are going to come when you enter the office that you're going to have to deal with? Because you're obviously going to get into an office and have things that were there existing. How are you going to deal with those things?
That is very easy. I've already worked it out. Remember, I'm a businesswoman.
Yes.
I know that South Africa, as it is in shambles. Our vision, rebuild South Africa. The restoration part of it of South Africa is not going to have any limits. And we're going to start with the infrastructure. We're going to go to the people. We're going to stimulate the economy. So now, talking about the infrastructure, we don't have these rehabilitation centers I'm dreaming about. But we've got enough land. We've got enough warehouses. Some of them were built by Wokusi Mangope. The warehouses are everywhere across South Africa. They're just sitting and no one is utilizing them. Those things can be turned into rehabilitation, huge rehabilitation
because
centers
then another
in a while.
Another person would ask, budget. We know we have a problem of money in South Africa. The finance minister, during his budget speech, said that we are now going into our reserves.
Yes.
That means we are broke.
We are not broke as a South African government. The money is being allocated where it's not supposed to be. And it's being wasted like that. Because if you think about it, you go now, I mean, there's this thing they call EWP thing.
The one that
hires
people.
Let me tell you about how the government is wasting money. They're training the people even how to sweep the streets. Is that economy stimulation?
No.
So why do you invest your money on that thing? Why don't you prioritize things that are supposed to be prioritized? Why don't you generate jobs for people to be able to start exporting the goods from South Africa? You know, I was just thinking that our government, within 6 months, ANC says 5 years, they will create 3 million jobs. I am saying our first 6 months is going to create 3 million jobs. I've worked it out already.
Okay.
Because there's so much that
and how, which sectors would you go into? Would you work with the private sectors? Because those private sectors that we speak about are the monopolies. They are the big money is with the white people. The big money is with the big monopolies. Are you willing to work with those same people?
You know what? Sometimes they say, when we have enemies, you must sleep with them. Do you know what they are thinking?
Yeah.
You know, I'm just thinking, when we start this, the All Citizens Party is the party for all South Africans, black and white.
Yes.
We are going to utilize the very same money that the whites are using to develop the black nation.
Mm.
We are going to utilize the very same industries that they have to put in our people so that they can be taught the skill and go and start. We're going to turn things around. Take, for example, mining.
Yes.
The beneficiation must be done in South Africa. We shouldn't, you know, like have our children go down in the stomach of the earth, dig the gold and diamond, the biggest, and then we now travel it to overseas. And then after they process it, it comes back to South Africa. You buy the goods. The beneficiation must be done in South Africa. So now, when we do this, we must come with aggressive ways of doing things. It shouldn't be a lip service. We must get into, remember the land issue in South Africa.
Which has still not been resolved.
It's not resolved, but the new government is going to take the land and return it to the rightful owners, which are the kings.
And how is the ACP going to do that?
The kings. We.
Because if we're failing now to expropriate land without compensation, something that, you know, we spoke about a few years ago, but today no one speaks of
that. We're going to leave all those terminologies. Those are terminologies.
So you
we're going to be real about it. As we talk to you right now, the ACP has got one of its manifestos,
restoration
of the kingdoms.
Yeah.
Because those are the landowners.
And are you saying, Guti, let's bring back the monarchies? Is that what you're saying?
Actually,
bring back the Mangopes. The monarch, bring back.
Let me tell you, the top structure of the ACP.
Yes.
The one that is going to get into government.
Yes.
Has got kings inside. Hmm. We've got what we call the Prime Minister Department, the traditional Prime Ministry, which is going to handle traditional affairs. And that is led by a king.
So you would scrap this whole department of traditional Kokta. Yes.
Kokta must be scrapped.
Must be scrapped. So are you...
If Kokta is meant for kings, let the king lead the Kokta.
But we still have a government system.
The government system will be there. You know, the structure in ACP is in such a way, it's very interesting.
Yes.
We've got several political parties that have joined us.
Okay.
And then we have formed what we call Presidential Council.
Okay.
And it's led by me.
By you.
It's led by the All Citizens Party.
Okay.
They have all decided and agreed that they're going to wear the orange color.
Okay.
And they're going to be the ACP.
Okay.
So now what we do there, all the political leaders will be in the top structure of ACP, includes the political parties that are led by kings.
Yeah.
And then we are all going to make decisions together. You see how...
So you still have a cabinet, you still have all of that, but then working hand to hand.
So now, to take it further down, then it's divided into two. Dr. Snati Fisher is the president.
Yes.
Is going to have two deputy presidents.
Mm-hmm.
One will be dealing with political issues.
Mm-hmm.
Deputy president that will be dealing with political issues.
Yes.
And then the other one will be the Prime Minister of Traditional Affairs.
Just like how it works in KZN.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the land
is
going to fall under the king. The kingdoms.
So government will not have any say.
They will follow the constitution, our supreme law. We're going to follow the constitution, but we're going to take from there.
Yes.
And implement. Who is the owner? Who is supposed to rule on the land issue?
But won't that come with some resistance, Doc? From
who?
From, you know, the private sector who has...
The private sector has always been very resistant to changes because the part of it, the people have screwed on the constitution and now it is for them.
And the currency of the country?
One attorney was telling me that according to the law, if you steal this cell phone, even if you can have it until it's broken down, it does not belong to you. It belongs to the owner. So if you steal the land, it remains the land of the owner forever. Even if you give it to your grandchildren. So now, who is going to resist that the land should go to the owners? As long as we can prove.
Because we have that now, you know. We have political parties giving title deeds. they're not giving the land. They're allocating it.
Then we go to our first vision, yes, where we say we want to rebuild South Africa. Rebuild South Africa by bringing, by actually even making it a lawful country.
Mm.
Currently, it's lawlessness. Everybody does as they want. You know?
Mm.
I mean, you can see that even dagga is allowed to be smoked. Mm. Our children now are hooked on dagga.
Mm.
And then you find that the whole family is smoking dagga weed.
Mm.
And then because it's lawful.
So you will stop things.
So
like
we're going to look into so many things that we need to correct as a country, and then we need to correct as a political party, and then bring order. Because I believe that that includes the illegal immigration.
I was about to go into that to ask you about what will, as the ACP, what will you do with our borders, and how will you make sure that lawlessness, because it starts there. Let's be honest, it starts there by the borders where we are allowing an influx of people to come in. I'm not saying what the crime is committed by, you know, people who are not from South Africa.
We are not even looking at those things.
But how are you going to deal with that, Doc?
You heard me, I said.
Yeah.
The issues of land talks about terminology. Yes. No action but terminology and lawlessness.
Mm.
And stealing things from their owners.
Mm.
Now, with immigration, you must look at illegal immigration. And don't talk about people crossing the borders, people doing this and that. Ask yourself, do we have any law in South Africa that deals with an illegal immigrant?
We don't.
We do. Immigration laws.
But do we take them seriously?
Yes, that's the question you must ask me.
That's why I'm like, we don't, because we don't take them seriously.
There
in this
is
country.
The law in South Africa.
Yeah.
The Constitution is the supreme law. There are so many laws about a definition of an illegal immigrant. And then we find ourselves as a country having this flooded by illegal immigrants than the legal ones. So what does the law say? When you see an illegal immigrant, what do you do with that person?
But how will you know that person is illegal, Doc? Because no one will come and tell you, if you can go here, just here, bro. And you can't go to a person and say, hey, are you an illegal foreigner?
No, in the first place, how did people get in the country without the right documentation? That is where it starts. Where is the rule of home affairs? Where is the rule of law enforcement? Where is the rule of, you know, law enforcement like BOSARS?
Yes.
Where the goods, the drugs are being peddled into our country to destroy the nation. So the government of All Citizens Party is only going to focus in law enforcement, because we have got the laws that we can look up to do what we're supposed to do. So everything looks very simple that people could not solve because they had the second agenda. We have just only one agenda, rebuild South Africa through the infrastructure and through the nation building projects, and that's it.
And how can we trust to go to the ACP is not just a party that's looking for a seat in the National Assembly or in a provincial legislature?
You must look at that through my own journey that I walked.
That you went to.
I personally, I've always been taught to share with people. At one stage, you know, I was angry with my mother for a long time because when she came with those teas and she would buy me two jerseys, and when she comes in, she used to look at the person who is staying with me and she'll say, how old is your child? And that person will say, and she'll take the best jersey, give it to that mother and say, give it to your child. And I'll cry the whole day because I'll remain with the one that I didn't want. And one day I went to her and I said, you hate me so much. You don't even want me to have something nice. She said, you know why I'm doing this, my daughter? I want this lady to take care of you like you are her own child. So I learned about not to care for people from... I was raised like a princess myself. I was taught how to become a leader, by those two women.
Grandmother.
I'm carrying this thing with me. One day I called a family meeting, my three children. I called them and I said, when they were growing up, I said, my children, this thing used to affect me. Is it not affecting you that every time, every weekend, I call children from other families to be with you? And they said they are not affected. It's simply because I was doing what I was taught as a child through generations. And now, I have now, as a grown-up person, I'm applying it to South Africans. I'm now sharing, I've built houses, I'm a philanthropist.
Yes.
I'm a humanitarian.
Yes.
I'm very sensitive to people who are suffering. Sometimes I feel that I take so much risk with people that I'll be arrested myself. Because I'll give you everything and then the next thing I can hardly even pay my own debts. That's why I'm not credit worthy at this moment. So South Africans should be comfortable with my leadership. I'm a mother. I've raised my own children.
You're an activist as well.
I am. I'm a mother to thousands of people that I care. I've hired more than 1,000 people in my life. Currently, I've given jobs to the most vulnerable group of people, the blind people. Our T-shirts for the party are made by blind people. I remember when we started, I was cutting for them. I said, blind people are also people. They've got everything else except the sight, but they can use their own hands. So I can tell you that South Africa should feel comfortable that finally a non-politician, a non-politician, a mother, a person who cared for them from long time ago, from the time of being a child.
Someone who specializes in healthcare.
Yes.
Who gets it.
Someone who cares, someone who knows that if something like this goes wrong, this will be wrong. Someone who respects the law. A mother, at my age, I'm not looking to become rich. I'm looking
to
have the country transformed so that my family, my the coming generation of South Africa can have a better country. So they must be comfortable with my leadership. And you know that I've told people that when things are broken, a mother should come in the kitchen and
that's
fix
true.
Them. I'm here.
Do you think so?
Sweep the floors.
Just before we end it, do you think there's hope that South Africa will be led by a female one day? Because that's something that is really worrying me, Uti. I'm going to live in a time where I don't see a female president because we need, as you say, if something is broken, we need a female.
You need a mother.
Need a mother.
Yes.
To come in. Do you think South Africa will ever get a female president?
It has to happen in these coming elections. South Africans must make the right choice. They must choose Dr. Sinathi Fisher to be their mother because the country at this moment need a mothering. We need to fix many things. Men has failed us for over a decade. They have actually been leading since South Africa was established. As we sit in right now, things have gone from bad to worse. So now is the time for a woman. And South Africa on the 29th of May must make the right choice of voting. I am actually saying, even those that belongs to other political parties, that they love so much. They must vote for the All Citizens Party so that a woman president can emerge from ACP.
And sorry, just
in, these elections,
in these coming elections. Just one more thing, Doctor. And I know I'm a listener who's listening to this podcast probably asking, why isn't he asking the corruption question? What's your plan with corruption? Reading your manifesto, I didn't really get an understanding of what you plan to do with corruption because it's a big thing in this country. We're on the gray list, as they speak of money laundering and all of those things. What do you plan to do with corruption in this country?
First of all, Tabo, the All Citizens Party has got a strategy of dealing with corruption, but starting from the end, we are going to replace. The All Citizens Party is not coming with old politicians. I'm coming with young, fresh political activists. I told you that I'm not a politician myself.
Yeah.
I've got kings and pastors and everybody on the Excellency presidential team. So we're going to use what we call replacement therapy. You know when you don't have
replacement therapy.
You know when you don't have enough blood in your body.
Yeah.
Or enough vitamins.
Yeah.
They put you on a replacement therapy. So we are going to replace the corrupt politicians because the new government is coming with new people altogether. The only thing we'll adopt is the laws.
The laws.
Because we have to enforce them.
Any politician you target?
And the politicians that, you know, we are not targeting anyone.
Because a certain leader of a certain party made a list of the top 10 politicians he would go for when he's in charge.
Look, we are not even getting into that.
Yeah.
We are saying we are given the priority of the law in our hands. And the new party is coming with everything fresh. If you find ourselves in our list and people have classified you, remember, there is this statement that you should not be regarded guilty until you are proven or you are a guilty person.
That's guilty.
Yeah, so I cannot say anybody is guilty. I personally feel sometimes that certain people are being suppressed in the law.
Yeah.
And those people, they must go through the process and be declared not guilty. You see, that is the only time I can say everything is okay. But the new system that is coming in here is going to be a system of lawfulness. And we use replacement therapy of all the systems that have been corrupted, and the corrupt ones that have been proven that they are corrupt and is true, and then they will be taken through the processes.
And I know your team is looking at me like time, but I wanted to put in this question. Is the All Citizens Party ready to go into a coalition with another party? If it push comes to shove, you guys get to that point, would you give your vote to a certain political party? Are you willing to go into coalition?
Yes. You know, currently, I've got seven parties. Alliances.
Yes, alliances.
We are already a coalition. Yeah. Eh? If we don't make it, and one party says, I need 5 or 10 seats.
For example, let's say the EFF or the MKP party.
If the people comes, we have got just one condition.
Yes.
One only.
Yes.
Make the AC, Dr. Fisher, the president.
Okay.
We'll give you our vote.
We'll give you the vote. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is Dr. Senathi Fisher, the leader of the All Citizens Party. She's joined me on this podcast. Thank you so much, Doctor, for your time, and all the best for May 29th.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to the listeners.
That has been this episode of the 30 Years of Democracy podcast with myself, Thabo Tshabalala. Thank you guys for listening.
Thank you.